Good day. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the CervoStream Full Year 2022 Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during this session, you will need to press star one one on your telephone. Please be advised today's conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Lee Mackinder, Managing Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to CervoStream's FY 2022 results presentation. As per the introduction, my name is Lee Mackinder, the Managing Director, and I'm joined today by our Chief Financial Officer, Linda Coe, and Head of Investor Relations, Chloe George. As per the introduction, we're recording the session today via webcast. It's open to all CervoStream shareholders, and we have a number of institutional investors and analysts on the conference bridge whom are welcome to ask questions at the conclusion of the presentation. Before moving into the presentation, you'll note that today the business is releasing its preliminary final accounts. Unfortunately, due to some unforeseen disruptions associated with COVID, which has impacted a number of key personnel, the audit was not able to be finalized last week as originally scheduled. We thought we might get there. We're very close, and the audit is substantially completed. We're just waiting on some final processes to be reviewed, and we envisage uploading a full set of the audit accounts along with the director's report in 3 days' time, being Friday the 26th of August. Okay, moving into the presentation, and I'll direct you to slide 3, some of the key messages. I don't generally use the word transformational, but I do think it's appropriate when we consider the significant year the business has had, effectively doubling in size as a result of the successful acquisition and integration of Lendlease Services. The group's delivered solid financial performance. It's headlined by EBITDA from operations of 91.1 million, impacted by a solitary issue within our utility division that I'll touch on further in the presentation. Another year of strong cash flow generation, an exceptional EBITDA to OCF conversion rate of 108%, well ahead of the group's 80% target. We have a robust balance sheet, and we're very pleased to announce the resumption of dividends. The acquisition of Lendlease is understandably a major focus this year, and I'm very pleased that over the initial 8 months since reaching completion, the business has successfully exited all modules of the transitional services agreement by 30th of June, in line with our plan. That's both significant and exciting as we now have all the systems and processes managed in-house, and we're now working on making changes to drive further efficiencies and optimize our expanded operations. We've been able to continue supporting the fast-tracking of synergies ahead of our original 18-24-month program, and the profit contribution of Lendlease Services business was in line with diligent expectations. We're very pleased that CervoStream has demonstrated its resilience in navigating the headwinds of COVID-19, particularly the impacts this has had on labor market, broader labor market availability challenges, cost pressures, and adverse or extreme weather, particularly that during the second half of the year. However, our business is not totally immune, and the impacts were contained to delays and overruns with a major water project being undertaken in Queensland, which I will talk through in greater detail in the presentation. We have confirmed a non-cash goodwill impairment of our energy and water CGU of 38.2 million. This is non-cash. It's associated with legacy operations which incorporate meter reading, disconnection and reconnection of electricity and gas services, and contact center operations, as well as a revision in the group's WACC rate. Turning to slide 4, I'll briefly talk through some of the group's key financial headlines for the year, and then Linda will further expand on these later in the presentation. Total group revenue for the year was 1.56 billion, reflecting an increase of 760 million or 95% on the prior period. That was made up of 727 million contribution from Lendlease Services over that initial 8-month period, coupled with better than expected work volumes across our telecommunications division and some small growth across utility operations. Business reported EBITDA of 91.1 million, and that reflected a 13.7% increase on the prior year. The group's EBITDA margin for the year was 5.8%. That was impacted by the expected margin dilution from Lendlease Services integration, as we previously outlined, with lower margin works, and also some adverse weather impacts, most notably impacting utilities and transport operations. Adjusted NPAT was 31.4 million, down 19% on the prior year, and that includes a 2.1 million dollar reevaluation of Lendlease assets that were acquired through the transaction. As I stated earlier in the highlights, I think one of the strengths of our business over many years has been the strong cash flow from operations. They're reflective of our tier one client base, the business's ability to ensure that we've got optimal processes to support the timely and accurate billing for works that have been complete. And net debt finished at $81.3 million as at 30th of June. And again, Linda will provide an update on the group's balance sheet later in the presentation. And finally, with respect to dividends, after pausing the payment of dividends to assist with funding the acquisition, the board are very pleased to resume dividend payments to our shareholders with a 1 cent dividend for the full year. And the board reinforced their commitment to ongoing dividend payments, of course, subject to business performance. I'll move you into slide five and provide further insight into the group's revenue profile. The first point I'd like to note is ServiceStream's improved revenue mix following the acquisition of Lendlease Services. Revenue diversification has been a major part of our group's strategy over recent years as we look to expand the operations across new and growing industry sectors. About 80% of our work relates to favourable annuity-style operations and maintenance or minor capital works, with minor capital works often associated with small individual projects where ServiceStream holds a position on our clients' capital works panels. And these are often short-term projects, generally completed over a few months in duration. So very pleased that we've got approximately 80% of work held with government or government-related entities, and the balance with major industrial Tier 1 asset owners and operators across the country. Moving to slide six, we wanted to provide an update in terms of the group's work in hand. I think another strength of the business and a highlight of FY22 has been the strong work in hand held across the group. Not only has the group's work in hand forward order book grown, it's also increased the diversification and reduced our dependency on any single market or client program. In line with increasing investment spend and investments made by our clients, the group's order book has increased to more than $6 billion as of 30 June. This reflects on the initial term of what are multi-year agreements and equates to approximately 3.2 times our FY22 pro forma revenue. Again, each of those agreements generally include multi-year extension options, which we don't include when we reference current work in hand. I'm very pleased that over the year, the group's performance in retaining our existing agreements, but also securing new works, has resulted in approximately $1.5 billion of revenue being secured. The graphs on the bottom of the page provide a further breakdown of the group's work in hand, and we've incorporated that both in terms of segment and work type. Draw your attention to the breakdown of construction-centric work, and I'd just like to make the following points. Possibly the business has less than 1%, which relates to fixed price, lump sum or major construction programs. Just over 16% is aligned to either alliance agreements or those which are formulated on a lower risk targeted cost model. And that's where costs can be recovered, and it's only overhead or margin that may be at risk. And there's a very small portion of construction works which utilise a schedule of rates. I think it's particularly important, given the focus on inflationary pressures, to understand the positive position that ServiceStream finds itself in regard to the nature of our agreements and that strong forward-looking order book. As I just mentioned, in light of the current economic climate, we've provided additional detail on slide seven to assist in understanding the nature of our contractual agreements and the business's ability to manage those inflationary pressures. First point I'd make is that over 87% of the group's revenue is subject to either an annual price review mechanism, or in the case of shorter dated minor capital works, these are priced by the business on an ongoing basis, and therefore we take into account rising labour and operating cost changes when putting forward our pricing submissions. We have limited exposure to fixed price lump sum D&C works over a 12-month in duration, as per my prior slide. The majority of our revenue is in fact derived from lower risk schedule of rate arrangements. And the group has progressively sought, as we've discussed previously, to move the majority of our materials to be supplied by our clients. If we look at each of our reporting segments at the bottom of the page there, we've provided some detail as to how they do differ slightly. Telecommunications, we have more than 85% of future work in hand subject to an annual review. The annual review typically involves a constructive review with our clients across all rates and overheads. Reviews don't understandably occur at a single point in the year, but are progressively occurring at set contract milestones. And the work in telecommunications, as many will know, is generally undertaken on a schedule of rates basis, where we look to fix rates downstream for the works to be complete. Utilities, slightly different model there. 95% of our work in hand is subject to automatic annual adjustments, or they're priced on application, as I stated, for the small minor capital works. The adjustment mechanisms include CPI and or WPI, and that just depends on the nature of each agreement and how labour intensive they are. Importantly, the group has, as I said earlier, 2 to 3 larger D&C projects, equating to less than 1% of work in hand, which currently extend over a 12-month period. And the third and final division with respect to transport, 70% of the work in hand either has either quarterly or annual adjustment mechanisms in our agreements. Those agreements which are associated with longer-term maintenance activities has cost escalation priced in when we initially submit our pricing. And again, any minor capital works which are undertaken generally completed over a 3 to 6 month duration, and our commercial teams base that pricing on current or expected market conditions. Turning now to slide 8, and we'll just touch on group safety. As many would have heard before, the health and safety of our workforce, our clients and the communities in which we operate genuinely remains our highest priority. With more than 9,500 resources which may be undertaking field works at any point in time, we look at driving continual improvement across our operations and particularly focus on those high-risk tasks. During the last year, the inclusion of Lendlease services was a factor in the decline of some group performance metrics. We expected this. We identified it during due diligence, so it didn't come as a surprise. I think it's important to note, though, that the business takes, the Lendlease business takes safety very seriously. And the difference in performance is more associated with the nature of the field operations and the expanded markets that the business operates across. I've been really pleased with the positive aspects that the acquisition has brought to the wider group in terms of health and safety. That's included specialist industry experience, strong and proactive culture, and leading HSE management systems, one of which is now being expanded across the broader service stream group and will go live in the coming months. Business continues to deliver strong safety performance. Very pleased to see industry leading lost time injury frequency rate of 0.77. And our focus for the year ahead is to continue to work on those higher risk work activities, as I stated, and looking to implement improved critical controls, which will drive continual improvement across our safety culture. Turning to slide 9, entitled Sustainability Initiatives, we continue to take a measured focus in driving improved ESG outcomes. We've provided some highlights here in terms of our sustainability pathways, covering the 5 major areas of focus. They incorporate health and safety, environment, people, governance, and community. I think it's really important to note that those 5 pathways reflect alignment with the sustainability materiality assessment that we conducted last year. And that was a broad engagement across all of Service Stream stakeholders, which really guided our priorities and areas of focus. The group sustainability report is due to be released on 1 September, but some of the highlights have been included here. They include that this year we've aligned the group's sustainability strategy and reporting to the UN Sustainable Development Goals Framework. We've adopted a science-based targets framework across our Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions and targeting a 50 to 60% reduction by 2025. Community is a major focus for us, and we continue to support Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, with the group only a few months away from releasing our inaugural Innovate Reconciliation Action Plan. And of course, given the important role that our people play in the business's success, there's a significant body of work being undertaken in terms of enhancing our employee value proposition. That's included a review and changes to non-financial and financial benefits, and I would fully expect that to continue to be an area of focus into the future. Moving into the second section of the presentation, and we provide a couple of slides here which update on the integration program, so I direct you to slide 11. As outlined in my introductory comments, a lot's been achieved by the group over this year, and I'm really pleased and genuinely excited with the progress that's been made against our original timeline of 18 to 24 months. Some of the highlights and milestones that we've achieved through a year include successfully exiting from the TSA by 30th of June. That reflected a significant amount of work, but has enabled all of the systems and processes to move in-house, and the business is now working to optimise and drive further efficiencies over the next 12 months as we conclude the integration program. We successfully completed the restructure of our telecommunications and corporate support functions. Those corporate support functions incorporate HR, finance, payroll, safety, IT, etc. The utility division restructure is very well progressed. Several key appointments have been made, and we expect that to be finalised over the coming months. In relation to the synergy program, this continues to pleasingly track ahead of schedule. We've worked to fast-track the delivery against our targeted $17 million of synergies, and so far delivered approximately $10 million on a run rate basis as of June 30. That's both ahead of our initial estimates in terms of timing and quantum. The group's achieved an enormous amount of work in this area over the last year, whilst importantly maintaining our focus on business as usual operations around the country. And I thank all of our people working right across the business for their efforts involved in the program. We have noted the integration program costs that we initially estimated back in July last year at approximately $15 million will come in a little higher. That just really reflects the scale of the program and some of the challenges with constrained labour in the market during the year. Slide 12 talks to the timeline and updated synergy realisation. In relation to those areas, the business, as I said, is running ahead of schedule and in a very positive position. The focus for 22 was really on delving further into the business, engaging with and supporting key people as we brought the two organisations together. I really wanted to ensure that we gained a deeper understanding of the operations across the business, and then we're then able to implement the majority of the organisational changes, but ensuring we retained our key people. A major focus was also the exit of the TSA, as I just discussed, and that was successfully concluded. We really wanted to work to align the entire business under a consolidated brand, and they were just a few of the priorities we discussed throughout the year. The next phase of the program focuses on securing growth opportunities across the expanded market segments and client base. We'll continue to refine the organisational structure and align many of the group's systems, and those alignments will support optimising processes and simplifying the group's support operations. Slide 13 talks to the group transformation and how the acquisition has really supported the growth and diversification of revenue and operations. The graphs at the bottom of the page talk to this progression over what is a relatively short period of time. We can see in FY21 on the bottom left-hand side there that revenue was $800 million, focused across two divisions and a small number of utility and telecommunication clients. That's significantly changed over FY22. Pro forma revenue, $1.9 billion, spread across three market segments. And importantly, those market segments are all exposed to major infrastructure investment. And then if we look further and we consider the group's strong pipeline of work in hand, again, approximately $6 billion in value, we see how well we're positioned for the future. Importantly, this growth is weighted towards annuity-style or O&M works or minor capital works, as that was the majority of the works that we acquired through the Lendlease transaction, and aligns with our focus in growing the annuity-style revenues of the business. It's reduced the group's dependency on any single client or market segment, as I stated earlier, and we continue to hold, I think, an enviable client base. 80% of our work is held either directly with government or government-related entities across the country, and that remaining 20% is with major industrial asset owners and operators. And finally, before I hand across to Linda, who will provide further context and insight into the group financials, I'll provide an update on our segment performance, and we refer you to slide 15, which updates on our utility division. Utility division generated revenue of $697 million. That represented an increase of $284 million, or approximately 68% on the prior corresponding year. Utilities EBITDA from operations was $19.5 million, reflected a decrease of $9.5 million against the prior year. Unfortunately, as I stated earlier, the division did experience some challenges which reduced EBITDA over the year. Those challenges were associated with two aspects across our legacy utility operations, not associated with the acquired Lendlease Services business. The first of those related to a large water project that I referenced earlier, and that's where we're constructing a major pipeline water transfer or pumping station. The delays were initially due to resourcing constraints, both across our field operations and some of the specialist partners and contractors we've had to rely on. That was then further exacerbated by multiple and prolonged delays associated with some extreme wet weather across Queensland, particularly during the second half of the year. As a result of these challenges, the group recognised a $5 million onerous contract provision for the project. We wrote back a small profit that had been recognised, and we've had to make an update in terms of our expected forecast cost to complete. We're approximately 50% complete through the project and expect the entire program to conclude in this current financial year. It was a disappointing result, as our businesses have not historically incurred these types of challenges and outcomes. The vast majority of our revenue is based on operations and maintenance or minor capital works, and those small projects being completed over a short period of time. On the positive side, the group has less than 1% of future revenue associated with those larger major design and construction works under a fixed price or lump sum contract framework. And as I said before, that's where we're going to continue to focus, particularly given the expanded service offerings as a result of the acquisition. The second impact this year was in the utility division, and that was associated with some of our legacy operations, traditionally associated with the energy and water division of the utilities. That included work such as reconnection, disconnection of utility services, meter reading, and some minor meter replacement works. Linda and I have previously discussed the impacts to these areas throughout the COVID pandemic. Volumes have been improving, but they've not returned to those pre-COVID levels. Those continuing impacts across the energy and water operations and a revision of the group's weighted average cost of capital resulted in that $38.2 million non-cash impairment of goodwill. As I said, that impairment is largely associated with historical goodwill across those legacy utility operations, but important to note, it also includes some non-core contact centre operations which haven't been a focus for many years. Post-acquisition, the utility division has expanded its capabilities, got broad utility services market, as we denote by the revenue breakdown, electricity, gas, industrial and water. And we'll leverage those expanded capabilities across those markets to support continued growth. I think fortunately the group's diversified portfolio has assisted us in offsetting or reducing the impact of these challenges. And the telecommunications division is one which has had a very positive year, and I'll move on to next, direct you to slide 16. So the telecommunications division generated $640 million in revenue, representing an increase of $247 million, or approximately 63% the prior year. That increase in revenue reflected the addition of Lendlease Services telecommunication operations. They included revenue from NBN's network construction upgrade program, references N2P, and Optus, where we provide a range of O&M field services, as well as an expanded portfolio of wireless operations, now servicing all major telecommunication network owners and operators. EBITDA over the period was $61.5 million. That was up 6.5% on the prior year. Telecommunications EBITDA margin of 9.6% reflected the reduction in scale across the legacy service stream operations, as we previously flagged and advised was going to be expected. The margin remains robust, though, includes some dilutionary impacts associated with the Lendlease Services acquisition, again, as we called out, but offset that is some benefit of cost synergies post-acquisition. I think the telecommunications division has made really solid progress this year to integrate the operations, and I'm really pleased that we've got that expanded depth and breadth of services, and I think we're really uniquely positioned to further capitalise on further investment in the telecommunications space. A major focus this year was on mobilising and supporting the NBN network upgrade program. That's associated with deploying fibre across legacy networks. This program's approaching the expected peak run rate in production in line with our targets. And pleasingly, we note that there's an opportunity for that program to now be expanded with an additional 1 million homes to be upgraded with fibre over the coming years. And finally, direct you to slide 17, which provides an update on the group's new transport division. Transport delivered revenue of $220 million with an EBITDA of $9.9 million during FY22. EBITDA margin finished the year at 4.5%, reflective of the 8 months of ownership. We did call out during the first half that we expected the margin to come down after some of those one-off program benefits that were delayed pre-completion were successfully completed over November and December. Operations during the second half were impacted, unfortunately, by some wet weather events. They caused a delay to road maintenance and some of the improvement activities, both across Western Australia and New South Wales. But they are delayed. Over the year, the business has made solid progress on improving or exiting those lower margin works that we called out. We note the decision recently by Main Roads WA to insource some aspects of their maintenance programs. That will reduce FY23 revenue, but it will actually support improved margin across this area. As we announced in March, the business's Regenerate Rail consortium, that incorporates, obviously ourselves, Plenary Group, GS Engineering, Clough, and Webuild, were appointed as preferred supplier for the Gowrie to Kalgoorlie section of Inland Rail. Our role in that project is to provide specialist operations and maintenance services as part of a 25-year maintenance period post-construction. I expect to be able to provide a further update on the status of that over the coming months. Outside of Inland Rail, there's a number of other road infrastructure programs which serve, I think, as exciting opportunities for the group. They're generally associated with providing maintenance and operations across both existing and new road infrastructure projects, as well as the deployment of smart technology or ITS, integrated technology solutions, which are aimed at improving traffic flow. I'll now hand across to Linda, who will run through some of the group's financial performance in greater detail.
Thanks, Lee, and good morning to everyone on this call. On slide 19, we have the profit and loss. Total revenue for the year was 1,563.8 million, which is 760 million or 94.5% higher than last year. I would like to remind everyone on this call that we have moved to a total revenue metric as opposed to statutory revenue this year to recognize the group's share of revenue generated in our incorporated transport joint ventures of 47 million during the year. Lendlease Services added 727 million of total revenue to the group from the date of acquisition, and revenue from the legacy service stream operations was 827 million, which was 2.8% higher than the prior year. EBITDA from operations was 91.1 million, which is an increase of 13.7% from last year. This result includes a better than expected performance from the rebased legacy telecommunications operation. On the downside, the utility and transport segments were impacted by the numerous and prolonged wet weather events, which Lee has outlined, including the significant impact to a major Queensland utility project. The full year result also includes a benefit of synergy delivery, which is tracked ahead of plan. Group EBITDA from operations margin reduced from 10% last year to 5.8%, largely reflective of the rebased group operation, dilution from lower margin LLS operations, which we flagged, and weather-related impacts to utility and transport businesses. It should be noted that the EBITDA from operations excludes 25.5 million of transaction acquisition and integration costs, including TSA expenses. The appendix includes a summary of these non-operational costs. Dropping down to NPAT, the group's adjusted NPAT or NPATA for the year was 31.4 million. Depreciation expense for the year was 39.3 million, an increase of 18.9 million, largely relating to the addition of Lendlease Services, which also includes additional depreciation from the upward revaluation of acquired plant and equipment of 2.1 million or 3.2 million on an annualized basis. The increase in net financing costs is obviously due to the acquisition, amplified by the recent interest rate increases. Statutory net profit after tax was a loss of 36.3 million. This reflects the non-cash goodwill impairment of 38.2 million against energy and water operations. It also includes an additional 5.4 million for the amortization of customer intangibles acquired through the transaction, taking full year amortization expense to 14 million. We have also provided an updated customer contract amortization schedule, which you can reference in the appendix. Moving on to slide 20, which is the cash flow. The key highlights here include the strong operating cash flow inflow of 98.7 million, which equates to an OCF conversion rate of 108%, which is well ahead of expectations. This reflects continuing focus on the release of working capital balances acquired through Lendlease Services and from recent contract mobilization. The net acquisition payment made for Lendlease Services was 313.5 million, noting that the final completion adjustment payment remains pending and is expected to be finalized this half ahead of December reporting. You will note that CapEx for FY22 was well below expectations. This is largely due to our focus this year being on TSA exit, which was conducted on a lift and shift basis, which did not require significant capital investment. The majority of new fleet requirements, including those from Lendlease Services, being undertaken via leasing model. We would expect to see an uplift in CapEx, particularly IT spend in FY23, as we transition to systems integration and improvement initiatives. Closing net debt for the year was 81.3 million. This equates to a 1.5x EBITDA leverage inclusive of lease liabilities, slightly ahead of where we expect it to be post-acquisition due to the strong cash flow and lower net debt position for the year. Our debt facilities at June remain unchanged at $395 million, and allowance of bank guarantees drawn of $113 million, the group has access to ample liquidity of approximately $200 million to support operations and future growth. All of the group's banking covenants were also comfortably met at June. Now moving on to slide 21, which touches on the group balance sheet. You will see here that we have continued to provisionally account for the Lendlease Services acquisition at 30th of June. This is largely due to the final completion adjustment still outstanding and expected to be finalised this half. We have, however, updated the provisional accounting since December, with the updated values presented on this slide. Firstly, of the $202 million of acquisition intangibles, we have allocated $103 million to the value of customer contracts and relationships. This will be amortised over a period of 15 years, and as mentioned previously, an updated amortisation schedule is provided in the appendix. We have recognised property, plant and equipment of just under $60 million. This includes an uplift in book valuation of $15.4 million, with commensurate increase to depreciation expense of $3.2 million on an annualised basis. The inclusion of Lendlease Services has certainly changed the composition of the group's balance sheet, with an uplift in working capital requirements reflective of the increase of working capital requirements of their contracts. The group's net working capital of $66 million has increased to just under 4% of LTM sales, but still remains well below our 5% targeted range. The other major movement to this year's group balance sheet is a $38.2 million impairment that we've made against the carrying value of energy and water goodwill that Lee has touched on. This is again reflective of the continuing earnings impact to the business since the onset of COVID and has led to a reassessment of the future cash flows of the business. These impacts have included a reduction in higher margin discretionary works, program disruptions and higher turnover of the itinerant field workforce, leading to higher costs and operating inefficiencies. We've also revised the group's WACC this year, which has also contributed to the impairment. All of energy and water's goodwill dates back to acquisitions undertaken over 15 years ago, and some even relate to legacy operations, such as the call centre operations, which are no longer being operated. Given energy and water has been our smallest operating unit historically, the reassessment of these CGU earnings is immaterial to the overall group outlook going forward. And that's all from me. So I'll now hand you back to Lee to take you through the remainder of this presentation pack.
Thanks, Linda. Before moving to Q&A, we'll conclude with the group's key messages and outlook for 23. So I direct you to slide 23, titled Key Messages. So I think, as for my introductory comments, I think FY22, the group's delivered a solid financial result, demonstrated resilience through some challenging times, although had some one-off issues that we've had to attempt to mitigate, particularly in the utilities area. Delivered another exceptional cash flow result. The company's balance sheet remains in a strong position, as Linda's just given an update on, and we have significant headroom to support future growth. We've outlined a strong pipeline of work in hand, approximately $6 billion, which has increased during the year. And we start the year with 85% of our forecast revenue secured. Of course, knowing we don't have guaranteed volume commitments in all agreements, but we do work proactively with our clients to update forecasts across each program throughout the year. The input challenges that have thus far been proactively and effectively managed across the group's broad contract base, I think is a benefit of those favourable commercial structures and adjustment mechanisms, and they've supported that cost containment thus far. As I discussed during the utility segment, with the expanded maintenance capabilities acquired through Lendlease, we'll focus on securing more of that annuity-style work and wind back what was an initial focus on some large-scale D&C projects, unless they operate under that balanced risk-sharing model. Priority, of course, remains on finalising the integration and delivering further shareholder value this year. And finally, on the outlook slide on page 24, we look to the future. I think Service Stream's got a strong and exciting pipeline of growth opportunities ahead across each of our sectors. Significant opportunities across each market and will benefit from continued investment by our clients, and the business is strengthened with those additional capabilities and that diversified portfolio. That'll include the continued deployment, renewal, upgrade of utility infrastructure, gas, water, electricity and industrial client base. Continued investment in the upgrade and further deployment of wireless and fixed line technology networks, and increasing investment in public and private road infrastructure networks. Group expects continued revenue and profit growth during FY23 on the back of the full year's contribution from Lendlease Services. That's subject to successfully navigating any extreme adverse weather events and effectively managing those continuing labour or resource challenges, supply chain impacts or any other market disruptions that may present ahead. We do expect continued inflationary pressure despite favourable contract structures and that cost containment thus far, but we will provide a further update on the business's performance at the company's AGM in October after we've got a first quarter under our belt. In closing, I'd like to take the opportunity on behalf of our board of directors to thank our staff working right across the country. They've supported the business through a significant year of change and positioning the business well for the future. Concludes the presentation, and I'll now hand back to the moderator to ask any questions from those joining us on the bridge.
Thank you. To ask a question, you will need to press star 11 on your telephone. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Marnie Lysaght with Macquarie. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, Lee. Hi, Linda. You can hear me?
We can. Thank you, Marnie. Good morning.
Perfect. Good morning. Morning. Just a few quick ones from me. I'm just looking at the balance sheet. I remember back at the time of the acquisition being announced in July 2022, you targeted, I think, leverage of less than one times at 24 months post-settlement. So is that still, you're still retaining that? And just remind me, is that a pre- or post-ASB target?
That was a post-AASB target, Marnie, and I think at this stage, I think we're still on track for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another one for me is just around the operating cash flow, the cash flow conversion. Obviously, I remember back at the first half we had some timing benefit there, which really boosted it. But kind of how do we think about this moving forward, given that we know that Lendlease, you know, wasn't as focused as the existing service stream business on the monetisation of cash?
Yeah, there's a couple of things going there. I mean, we've always maintained that, you know, we target an 80% plus each and every year, and that doesn't change. I think there's definitely opportunities. You can see they carry a heavier working capital load than we have. And part of the benefit we had this year was the monetising of what we got. We'll continue to do that, but as I said before, some of that will be dependent on contract cycles and ability to reposition ourselves each and every time these things come up. But it's certainly an opportunity for us.
Okay. And another question I have is just around kind of where you're at with the integration. Are you able to quantify that? Because I think back at the interim result, you said about 60% would have been done by the second half of 22.
Yeah, I think we're really well progressed. I think Lee's given a pretty good outline. I know it's kind of hard to understand. We live and breathe it every day. We did the telecommunications business unit and corporate pretty early on in second half. We've started the utilities part now. That's in progress. As Lee mentioned, we've got the key roles appointed and we're going down to the next level. What's really ahead of us is trying to consolidate some of the systems. It's quite clunky at the moment, obviously working across multiple systems. That's going to be continuing for quite a period, but we want to get at least the material items done over the next year. And then we're also starting to look at things like property rationalisation. So between the businesses, we've got quite a lot of sites and some of them within stone throws of each other. Obviously, that's dependent on when these leases come up for renewal, and what we're trying to do there is consolidate, you know, five sites into two or, you know, scenarios like that, and that's part of our synergy plan. That is a little bit more dated, and we'll probably, you know, get that towards the back end of this new year, but, I mean, it's just one of the elements. But, you know, we remain confident that we'll deliver the synergies that we've stated within the time frame, if not a little sooner.
Just to follow on from that, then I'll jump back in the queue. Just with the impact, the utilities being impacted by weather, would you say the fact that telco had received the integration and, you know, utilities is yet to be addressed, would that have also contributed to, I guess, the different results those respective divisions generated?
Good question, Marnie. I think certainly telecommunications going first was the right thing. We certainly identified that given our pedigree there, we were confident in making those changes. Utilities is a much broader division and it was more complex, hence why we sought to seek telecommunications and corporate first. I don't think the lack of integrating was a result of that or contributed to the challenges associated with that one Queensland project. I think that was something completely separate. Mm.
Yeah, but I think I would say that the integration synergies was largely telco, wide cost, corporate. There's not much in the kitty at all at June for utilities that's ahead of us. And so, yeah, there, you could say there's some of it, but not in the operational sense.
Okay, that's all clear. I'll jump back in the queue. Thanks for answering my questions.
Welcome, ma'am.
And our next question comes from the line of Piers Flanagan with Barrenjoey. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Morning, Lee and Linda. Thanks for your time. Just a couple from me, if I could. Maybe just firstly on the utilities project. So thanks for the additional comments. Have you seen any improvement sort of more recently within that project? And I guess how should we think about sort of the utilities segment margin sort of into 23? Will it be sort of along a similar sort of EBITDA margin run rate heading into 23 as what it was doing, over sort of two half?
Yeah, so Lee, just to talk through it, Piers. What we've effectively done by taking the onerous lease is we've basically dealt with, you know, the cost to complete this project at no profit. So we've dealt with that in the June accounts, and hence it's a bit of a double whammy. We are only about 50% through the project, so there will be a dilutive effect in terms of just seeing it out because we'll have some revenue but for zero profit, although we've quarantined that. But we would expect to see that what we have this year is a flaw, but there is just that timing difference that we had to navigate through.
Yeah, I'd expect to see. I think it's right, Piers. I'd expect to see, obviously, margin come back in the division improve this year because of that one issue being somewhat isolated. The rest of the utility operations have performed well, so I would expect that to go back up. It's a more of a one-off hit given that significant project.
Sure. And then just on the $91 million, are you able to give us a bit of, I guess, colour of how that compares, this is the underlying EBITDA, how that compares to sort of the pro forma guidance of the 120 to 125, just for a bit of context?
Yeah, I mean, the elements of the 120 to 125 was going back to... a year ago now was, call it base business 60-ish, Lindley Services 45-ish, and synergies of 17-ish, but that would be delivered over a 24-period time frame. I think the elements are intact. However, it's a bit challenging to pick that just from looking at the accounts. And the reason for it, you'll see disclosures in the accounts that Lindley Services contributed 46.4. Which doesn't take into account things like the synergy delivery that's embedded predominantly within Lindley Services, but also as we have stood up for a TSA replacement cost within the business, that's been borne under effectively the legacy SSN side. So you can't just take that disclosure at face value. But if you put aside the impact from the utility business, I would say that all elements are running pretty much in line with that at the moment, bar this issue we've had to deal with.
Sure. And so just on those Lendlease services comments, so $46.5 million, so sort of a 6.2 sort of implied monthly run rate. Does that not include synergies? Is that a pretty strong, I guess, monthly run rate?
That includes synergies. So if you go back to, obviously, if you divide that by 8 times 12, you're going to get a much bigger number than 45, clearly. So that does include synergies, and it does include the bit of one side, call the head office type cost that we've had to re-stand up. It's not sitting in that Lendlease number. It's just the way that, you know, that's their legal entity, and that's what we had to pull out and record.
Sure. And then maybe just on the outlook, I guess, how you're seeing sort of the tender environment at the moment and sort of the competitive backdrop?
Yeah, no, look, thanks, Fizz. Tendering environment has been really strong. It's been strong throughout the year, as we've previously talked about. Just about all of our sectors are seeing strong opportunities, particularly utilities. We're seeing a lot of opportunities there continuing around the sort of upgrade of infrastructure, a lot in the maintenance or industrial area as well, which is part of a Lendlease acquisition. So certainly seeing the highest level of activity that we've seen to date. Have no concern about the strength of our pipeline. I think the challenge is to make sure that we're selective as to which opportunities we focus on, just given those broader resourcing constraints in the market, and just making sure, as we always do, that if we're going to commit a client to a client that we can deliver their project, that we're comfortable that we'll be able to do so successfully. But no, really strong.
Great. And maybe just one final one, just on the Lendlease Services provisional balance sheet and the balance sheet. do you have any expectations that you can provide just on what that potential completion payment is likely to be, or should we wait till the December update?
Yeah, look, I mean, it'll be anywhere between a high single digit to maybe a low double, but there's so many factors at play at the moment.
Yeah.
It's that range.
We're probably a couple of weeks away from understanding that final outcome, Piers, but, yeah, we'll certainly provide update at the first half.
Great. That's it from me. Thanks, Lee. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Ian Munro with Orig. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Lee. Good morning, Linda. Thanks for taking my call. Can we just start on the onerous contract, please, just with respect to the provision of $5 million? What exactly have you provisioned against there? And just conscious that there's, you know, sort of 50% of the contract still to go in FY23. Can you give us a sense of, you know, how...
The way that the revenue recognition standard works is where you know that you have a loss-making contract, and basically what's transpired is with the onset of, you know, the delays and the weather and the additional costs, we've taken stock of the project and recognised that we have a loss-making project. What that requires us to do is to book it all now. So hence, that's my earlier reference to a double whammy. Not only have we reversed the profit to date, and we've basically had to book all the future losses now.
Including the increased cost or forecast cost to complete. And so we've taken up and done a detailed review of what those costs will be to complete the program, and that's been taken up as well.
So as best as we can, we've quarantined, call it the earnings impact from that project for future period. What we haven't quarantined is obviously the margin dilution because we've got to see it through, but the earnings impact has been... quarantined.
And so just with respect to performance bonds associated with that project, is there any funding facilities in place?
Yeah, there's a small amount with the client on that one, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's material.
No, and nothing's been called upon. We're engaging with the client. There's still a lot to work through as we go through the second half of the project, but importantly we've taken so what we think is a reasonable estimate on the cost to complete that, increasing those based on what we're seeing across the market. And I think importantly, like I said before, we don't have a lot of these large-scale projects at D&C. It's one of probably three projects that the business is sort of dipping its toe into, and we'll just be really cautious about moving further into those works given the current environment.
And so just with respect to D&C, I mean, it's historically been a strong point for Comdane in the mid-size, small to mid-size projects. So you're saying that that'll be a segment that'll be more of a focus going forward than the larger scale, and perhaps
absolutely.
You know, on the balance of larger scales, just reaffirming that you're comfortable with the performance there, and yeah, just trying to understand a little bit of the risk exposures and whether that's perhaps heightened over the next 6 or 12 months because of these weather events.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Comdane's pedigree was in those sort of minor capital works, small projects. We've typically said that they're several million dollars in revenue, generally compared over a 3 to 6 month period of time. That's the pedigree. They do that really well, and that's where we see a huge volume of work. So we'll continue to support those areas, but I think just given what we see around some of these pressures now, we will not be looking at any more sort of larger scale projects. Unless they have some of those favourable mechanisms, like we said, cost-plus type arrangements, et cetera, where you can limit your exposure to any lump sum or fixed-price cost models.
And then just, I guess, on the $5 million provision, if we're adding that back into the EBITDA, then we're at sort of, you know, 96 and, you know, some of those parts of the pro forma 120 to 125 are really coming together nicely. I'm sort of a little bit surprised that maybe you didn't take this opportunity to reaffirm that as a target into FY23. Can you maybe just give us a sense of, you know, the pluses and minuses of moving towards that number?
Yeah, no, absolutely, Piers. I mean, we're certainly, as you pointed out and Linda talked through, we're conscious of the 120 to 125, that pro forma guidance. That incorporated realising synergies over a 24-month period. I suppose where we stand here now, We've looked at that. We think those parts all still absolutely make sense. We're just cautious, obviously, with relation to the broader environment, but also looking at these water-type projects, these larger projects, making sure that we are pulling back in that area. We don't want to go further there. We'd rather pivot and make sure we continue to support those sort of operations and maintenance work. So at this stage, we didn't want to come out with a sort of a hard dollar EBITDA range. We thought what's more appropriate is to call out what we have and be able to give an update in a couple of months' time at the AGM when we've got a few months of trading under our belt, and we can talk about how the business is responding to those broader pressures. And we hope that we've been able to respond to them the same way we have this year, which has been able to mitigate the majority of those well.
And then just with respect to the margins, second half, sort of ex-land lease look as though they've stabilised across, certainly across telco and some other parts of the business. Maybe give us a sense of perhaps how you're seeing the, you know, utilisation across the business as we head into FY23. I know your comments around N2P and that scaling up. Perhaps you know, what would be an appropriate level of organic growth, you think, into FY23 across the business, assuming that there's no more, you know, onerous contracts and or any other one-offs. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I think we certainly will want, what will feature this year is an improvement in group margin. We won't have these one-off impacts that we've called out, particularly utilities. And I do think there's a number of other opportunities that we're working through, as we've talked about, shutting down some of these lower margin or loss-making contracts or turning them around. So I certainly think margin improvement across the group is what will feature through 23. As we talk about those sum of parts, telecommunications, I think, is rebased. That's a healthy margin, particularly compared to industry. Utilities will improve. Transport, I think, is probably thereabouts. We may see a slight improvement there. But I think at the group level, looking at the diversified portfolio, we will see an improvement in margin. As we said, there's a lot of opportunities to your second point there around sort of expanding some of those programs. Telecommunications certainly well positioned there to take on some of the additional work. But increasingly across the other divisions as well, really good pipeline, as we stated earlier. So I think that will assist in us building on the back of that and being able to recover that margin and improve it moving forward.
Thanks, Lee. I might leave it there. Thank you.
You're welcome, man. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, if you have a question at this time, please press star then 11. We do have a follow-up question from the line of Marnie Lycus with Macquarie. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, Marnie.
Yep. I'm just comparing, I guess, just from the documents detailing Lendlease Services pre-acquisition and what it's contributed to you guys for this past, for the portion of the financial year. Can you talk about the delta between what kind of did in FY21 in those comparable months compared to what it did this year?
Lendlease Services, what it delivered in 21.
Correct, on a comparable basis.
It was thereabouts flattish on 21 because it was cycling out the old construction program from NBN. So basically, I would say Lendlease Services is tracking in line with, call it, the 45-ish that we shared as a pro forma. And the sum of parts to that, as I outlined before, is you'll take the disclosures that are in the 4E, but you've got to pair them back because the synergies are largely embedded in their number, as well as corporate costs that stood up to replace the corporate services are sitting outside that reported entity because we basically costed all those expenses into the historical service stream entities. So they've had a bit of a free ride from a standalone legal entity. But basically, from what I can see, it's pretty much in line.
Okay. That's all clear. Thank you.
Thank you. And we do have a question from the line of Warren Jeffries with Canaccord Genuity. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
G'day, Lee and Linda. How are you going?
Good evening, Warren.
Quick one. All right. Not sure if it's been touched on, but just on the synergy run rate. Are you able to quantify what was actually delivered in the period?
$10 million
a run rate, and then...
Yep, absolutely, Warren. $10 million's a run rate. It's probably about $6 million, I'd say, is what actually hit the accounts throughout the year. So, yeah, that's probably what we saw as the 30th of June.
Righto. And then, so you're going to get 10 next year, and then we're getting pretty close to the 17 probably by the end of 23.
Yeah, that was
actually
being
always
our expectation. That's exactly right. Yep, absolutely. That's correct.
Facing, but by and large, most
be all done.
Implemented and received?
Well, there's a phasing. I mean, as I outlined, we're going through the utilities restructure now. Property consolidation will be a couple of months' time. So you've just got to phase that.
Right. So fully banked, though, 24.
Yeah, okay. Majority being the 24.
Perfect. All right, that's all, guys. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm showing no further questions at this time, and I would like to turn the conference back over to Lee McIndoe for any further remarks.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We appreciate you you dialing in and look forward to chatting with you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.